When the bones are good, the rest don't matter. Yeah, the pain could peel, the glass could shatter. Let it rain, 'cause you and I remain the same.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
.307, welcome back to Ottawa Now. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for your thoughtful emails that you're sending to ottawanow@cfra.com about March break. The Ontario Medical Association is sounding the alarm about the amount of misinformation that is still out there, that is still spreading about this pandemic and COVID-19. It released new data showing that more than 100,000 Ontarians are actively engaged in social media conversations about things like whether the pandemic is a hoax, or whether or not they should get the vaccine when they're eligible. About 3/4 of people taking part in these conversations are supporting or promoting the misinformation, while the others are questioning or trying to refute the allegations. Joining us right now to chat about this, I've got the head of the Ontario Medical Association, Dr. Samantha Hill. Welcome back.
Such a pleasure to be here again.
When you hear those numbers, what is your reaction?
It's scary, to be honest. Ontarians have been making really hard choices for over a year now and suffering consequences from this pandemic. And so when we hear numbers like 100,000 people are involved in this discussion and that 75, 76,000 of them are promoting misinformation, it's really discouraging. It's dangerous to have such a disproportionate amount of misinformation out there. And it puts everyone at risk, not just the people engaging in that conversation. So that's my initial reaction to it.
And were you able to find from the data collected exactly how much of it was about the vaccine, exactly how much of it was about the plandemic, as some people are calling it, the idea that this pandemic is not real and that it's staged?
Yeah, so it all kind of melds together into that cohort. What we know is that people over the age of 45 are mostly discussing policy and politic issues around the pandemic, whereas the younger cohort seems to be engaged more in this idea of, is it a hoax? Is the vaccine a hoax? You know, all of the conspiracy theories and all of the misinformation out there. And some of the misinformation is really flagrant, like the plandemic or, vaccine microchips. But some of it is just, it's milder and it's harder to catch at first if you're not paying attention. Things like the vaccine wasn't tested in Black communities, which of course isn't true. Or things like it's not safe to give to breastfeeding women, which again isn't quite true. And so we have to be really careful when we have these conversations to make sure that the public knows where to get the best, the most correct, the most up-to-date answers to their questions. And that, of course, is dependent on their community and their personal history. And so we keep recommending people to go back to their family doctor, go back to their public health experts. But of course, Googling things is sometimes easier.
Do you think that message is getting through?
I really hope so. And I hope that interviews that we do, like this one, really help make sure that message gets through.
But are there some people that are just too far gone because they've been marinating in this? This is all they look at. You know, you see who you follow, right? And generally, a lot of people are attracted to like-minded individuals. So if all of your friends on Facebook and all the people on Instagram and all your Twitter accounts that you follow are also putting this stuff out there, you're surrounded by it.
Absolutely. And so there's a confirmation bias, right? Anything that we hear that already agrees with what we think is proof that we were right. And things that we hear that disagree with what we think are obviously misinformation. And that's sort of how our brains work. It requires real scientific training and rigor to get past that. But, you know, I don't think most people are too far gone, as you would say. I think most people are trying to do the best they can in what has been a lot of information thrown at them really quickly and a lot of information that's changed really quickly from month to month and week to week. And I understand the concern or the lack of certainty about where to go. And so that's why we just keep saying to people, you know, I get that you're concerned. I get that you're scared. I get that you're worried. Those are all real things to be feeling right now. But why don't we help you with the right information and answering your questions and then see where we land?
Yeah, I think that's a great point to highlight. Misinformation and fear go hand in hand. And people are concerned. They want their fears to be heard. And so some of these false representations and some of these different pieces of misinformation online, they may have a hard time judging the accuracy of, because they're just feeling so fearful about the situation. Now, you've got members, doctors that are working tirelessly around the clock on the front lines. How does it impact their mental health and their attitudes when they're confronted and they see things like this?
It's really disappointing and it's really hard. As you mentioned, those working on the front lines they're struggling, whether they're doctors, nurses, or allied healthcare professionals. We're all struggling. It's been a long year and we are very committed to our patients' well-being and to our population's well-being. But when we see people flagrantly embracing misinformation, it's hard to stay reasonable and rational sometimes. And we hear that from our members. But again, at the end of the day, all we really want is to make sure that people can make informed decisions on real scientific information as opposed to misinformation. If someone chooses not to get a vaccine, fully understanding what that means and what the implications are for them, that's their choice at the end of the day. But most people won't make that decision with the right information.
Dr. Samantha Hill, I just want to quickly pivot and ask you something else before I let you go, because this is the topic of the day and you should see my inbox right now with parents and teachers that are weighing in about whether or not we should have March break this year. What do you think? Is it wise to have March break? Should we have a break or should the kids just carry on through and work on through?
I'm amazed that your people are emailing about March break. Mine are still emailing about whether or not they should be going back to school. Look, we will take those days as they come. The first thing that has to happen is we need to get everyone back into school, and that's going to depend on the numbers as we move forward. We have a plan to get everyone back into school, depending on what those numbers look like, depending on how many vaccines we've managed to get out by then. That'll make all the difference in the world. At the end of the day, it's not a question of whether or not we have March break, it's a question of what people do on March break. And we saw that there was a peak shortly after Christmas, and we know that the lockdown didn't start until after the Christmas holidays, and that's probably something that's going to need to be taken into account when we make decisions about what to do in March.
So most Ontario students are returning to the classroom next week. The students in Ottawa are already back. That's a huge weight off the shoulders of parents in these 13 other public health units. But then there's the schools in hot zones, and they will go back, but they're going back a little bit later. There's a delay, and they're going back on February 16th. When do you think is a good time to make a call? Would you make the call the week of February 16th once everyone is back?
No, I would make that call maybe a week before March break. And I know that makes it really hard for everyone to make a decision and figure out where their plans are. But I think if Ontarians have gotten good at anything over the last year, it's been rolling with uncertainty. So it's not like if we have March break, any of us are going down to Florida or taking a plane anywhere, I would hope. You know, even if we have March break, it's going to look the same as if we don't have March break. It's just a question of what the kids will be doing during that period of time. So one day at a time.
How important do you think it is for mental health right now, not just on the part of the students, but of the teachers as well?
March break or going back to school?
March break.
You know, I'm not sure that March break is going to be that important for mental health. They've been in and out of school and had various other breaks between now and then. I think the most important thing as far as our students' mental health, and particularly our young students' mental health, is going to be getting them back into those social environments. We know that children are suffering. We've heard it from various pediatricians and various pediatric societies. We know that we're seeing more eating disorders. We're also seeing more domestic violence. We're seeing a lot of things that are very concerning with respect to children's well-being and things that are going to take a long time to recover from. So we need to get them back into those safe and secure, predictable environments so that they can start to drop their cortisol level a little bit, get back to feeding their brain and feeding their bucket, so to speak, so that they can start to recover from the last year.
And so for you, Dr. Samantha Hill, it really comes down to the numbers, like the positivity rate, the case counts, other numbers pretty much that you'd have to look at a week before the actual break itself?
Yeah, it comes down to taking the gestalt or the whole of the situation. So there's no one number you can point at. I know Dr. Davila has come under a little bit of criticism for not being able to say it's this number or that number. But the truth of the matter is there is no one number. It's going to be what are all of the numbers? Are they trending up or are they trending down? And that's going to include things like the variants, right? Have our variants shot up to be 70% of our case count? Or are they still hovering in the low, you know, 1 to 2 percentages. What is our transmissibility? What is our virulence? And where is our healthcare system at that point? Do we have space for a little surge, or is a little surge going to tip us over the edge and we'll wind up in a position where we wind up with higher mortalities and higher adverse events simply because we don't have the ability to provide healthcare? So there's a lot of things that go into making these decisions, and it's why I'm always so relieved and pleased that we have experts in public health whose job really is to weigh all of those factors and then provide expert opinions.
Dr. Samantha Hill, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thank you. Have a great day and stay safe.
There's the head of Ontario's Medical Association, Dr. Hill, speaking about March break, and also speaking around misinformation and the alarming spread of misinformation, which, by the way, is happening right here in Ottawa. In fact, Councillor Tim Tierney is actually door knocking today, walking around, distributing pamphlets because he wants people to know that apparently this literature that went out to some of his residents, his constituents, was raising alarm about the vaccine and a number of other things. People saying, think twice about getting the vaccine, spreading inaccurate information. He said it's very scary. He said the literature said things like the vaccine is human experimentation, and he's very concerned about it. So he's been walking around personally distributing information from Ottawa Public Health. And we'll chat with him later on in the show. 319.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. It is 3:23. Keep those emails coming. Love to get all of your perspectives on March break. You know, we get a lot of response anytime we talk about schools, but the other emails that we've been getting lately were about pet grooming shops. If you can believe it, we've had an overwhelming number of people emailing in saying, I can't get my dog groomed, and this just isn't about the way that my dog looks. This is a medical issue because my dog is going to end up with mats, and they're very painful, and they could harm my dog. Getting a lot of emails like that. Well, the province appears to have heard you, because the province has given the green light for pet grooming businesses to open as long as they meet certain requirements. The calls from pet groomers and pet owners have obviously been getting louder, and they've been heard. Some of the restrictions go like this. Pets can be groomed now by appointment one at a time, and a business can open only if they are providing strictly necessary services. So these are services to prevent an animal from a foreseeable and reasonably imminent veterinary cause or imminent veterinary care, meaning that the animal would be harmed if they didn't go and get groomed. Joining us right now, somebody who owns a pet grooming shop in Arnprior. Ian Stepp, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Christy. And thank you for the intro. It saved me having to go through that.
So what do you think of this news?
Well, realistically, it's still vague at best. I mean, it's not much better than how it was back in March. In March, when the government called us other business for the health and welfare of animals, we fought really hard to get that changed. And a few of us went to bat. And in, I think it was May 21st, that Doug Ford finally announced us as an entity. He gave us respect that we were actually a grooming shop or groomers. And all of a sudden, it's been overturned. And the issue with what I'm seeing right now, I was on the groomer's website. It's a private site for us, and on Facebook, and it's just full of confusion. And that's the problem. What I don't understand about this is they're throwing us a bone and saying, yes, here you are. I'm going to make you happy. You can open up. But they're not letting us open up. The restrictions that are putting on us are vague at best, because it's not, again, defined. What you define an emergency or I define an emergency are going to be two different things. As a groomer, I see things that you may not understand, and I can clarify that, and I'll give you some explanations to that. I'm not talking about just a dog that comes in that's noticeably in distress. Their coat's literally matted to the skin. You can see that they're pulling at their coat. It's got to come off. But I mean, we've had animals that have come to us. I know other groomers with the same issue with a lab, a no-hair dog, but they have allergies and they need to be medicated, like once every week or 2 weeks or a month. That is as well an emergency. The way.
And so do you think you'd be able to care for that animal? Or do
Absolutely.
You think that you'd get in trouble if you did
no,
that?
No, I believe that we would. I would want to treat the animal. Would I get into trouble? That's the decision that our health unit would have to make. And that's the problem we're having. If I can just, I'll answer your question in a roundabout way, just to give you an example. Back in March when this started, I went on the rampage and called every municipality I could possibly get a hold of, a mayor. I called throughout Canada and spoke to various provinces and spoke to mayors. And what I found fascinating is in some provinces, it was recognized as pet groomers or pet grooming. In Ontario, it was other. If you spoke to one area, they would say that we were inclusive in other. Speak to another area and the health unit would say, no, you're exclusive, meaning you can't groom. I don't understand this discussion because we are an essential entity. Animals can't, like my wife needed some work done to her hair. So, I mean, she can dye it herself. She can probably clip her bangs off. But you can't expect the dog to self-bath itself for a medicated shampoo routine or clean its ears because it has ear problems. It needs our help. So to say to me, well, you can only go back if you do a dog that's in dire need, what do you mean is dire need? Because what I mean is dire need may not be what you mean. And I'll give you a further example to that discussion. When we were closed down in March, you couldn't go to a massage therapist, you couldn't go to a dentist, you couldn't go to a chiropractor, you couldn't go to a massage therapist. I had a root canal to be done. It was delayed 3 months because I couldn't get in. Now I can go to a dentist and have my teeth cleaned. Is a teeth cleaning considered essential? No. I don't see why you can't wait 3 months or 6 months for this to be lifted and get your teeth cleaned. But a dentist, I'm allowed to have my teeth cleaned. I can go to a chiropractor. Yet he doesn't say to me on the phone, well, I can't tweak your neck because your neck's not essential. If it was your back, it's okay.
So Ian, just in the last minute that I have you here, you've expressed a lot of confusion and echoed a lot of sentiments that we've heard from other pet groomers as well about the restrictions. But let me ask you this, given the other restrictions, like it is curbside pickup and drop off of the animal, that it's appointment only, that you're doing these animals one at a time, is that tenable for you to be able to do business?
Very quickly and very funny to answer it that way. We always have been that way. The only businesses that perhaps are a little more difficult in that manner are grooming shops that are massive, that have multiple groomers, that do multiple dogs. But in saying that, we all practice very tight and stringent hygienic protocols. We all have animals. I don't want to come home and bring a disease into my home. We all have kids. I don't want to bring a disease into my family. I don't want to transmit something. And I'm not referring to COVID. Dogs could have bugs on them, fleas, ticks, whatever. I don't want to bring it into my home. We can easily operate curbside. Hand me your dog. Wear gloves, wear a mask. I bring it in. When I'm done, I hand it back to you. Funny, I can go into a restaurant and pick up a food order. I can go into Walmart and go shopping, and some of the stuff people do in Walmart are even non-essential. They don't have to go and buy some of the stuff they're buying. In Quebec, Walmart's cut off. You can only get food. You can't go to the toy department. So I don't understand the mentality. I can walk into my physiotherapist face-to-face with a mask on and have him tweak me. Mm-hmm. But I can't have you hand me a dog curbside to bring inside. And we've always done it that way.
I see.
Always.
Well, Ian, listen, I got to go because I'm up against the news. Thank you so much for coming on the show and outlining this. We wish you best of luck.
Thank you. And thanks for having me, Christy.
Ian Stepp, who owns a pet grooming shop in Arnprior. Just after 3:30, Graham has all the news you need to know. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
3:39, welcome back. The Ottawa Mission is accepting new clients at its downtown shelter again. As you know, it had to shut its doors to intake because of COVID-19 cases. So did the Shepherds of Good Hope, the Salvation Army Booth Center, and the Cornerstone Housing for Women. They also had to stop taking new admissions. Joining us right now to chat about this, I've got Peter Tilley on the line, CEO and Executive Director of the Ottawa Mission. Welcome back, Peter.
Good afternoon, Christy.
So this is some positive news.
Yes, some news that we've been waiting on. It's been a trying couple of weeks when we first learned that we had some positives, multiple tests here, asymptomatic, which made it one of the challenges of being even aware that this was happening. We are a congregate setting, and of course, this virus spreads easily, so we were unaware it was amongst us. And now as we're learning, it's actually amongst the community. It's not whether it's at this shelter or that shelter. It's a community virus amongst our population that's caused several of us to have to go into lockdown. Our clients who were in isolation came back under our roof several days ago. They've all been asymptomatic, every one of them, not one of them, as far as we're aware, exhibiting any symptoms still, and we've been monitoring them regularly, and now they're back safe under our roof, so we felt we were in a position where we could help out the community and take in people as well, too. Tonight, for instance, we have a capacity to take in 8 beds, so it's not much. We're still very careful to follow Ottawa Public Health guidelines as far as our capacity, that we're not overcrowding the dorm rooms. As we've been doing for 11 months now, 4 people in a dorm room of 8, to 1 person in a dorm room of 2, etc., just to make sure that we're not overcrowding, we're not keeping people too close together. And any overflow right now is being directed to 311 or to go. It's likely going to be people will go down to the Tom Brown Arena. So kudos to the city and their staff, how fast they've been able to respond to this crisis and how fast the team there, the Human Needs Task Force, and the city staff working with Ottawa Public Health and Ottawa Inner City Health have, right through these last 2 weeks for all of us, been there to provide temporary alternate accommodations.
Peter, back to those asymptomatic positive cases. When you say the people are back at the shelter, they're now clear of COVID-19? They're now negative?
Yes.
The cases are resolved?
We've gone through the waiting period, and we're comfortable to bring them back into our setting here in a separate wing as well still. So, yes, everyone back. They had gone to one of the isolation centers while they waited their 14 days, and now they're back here under our roof.
So you should not have any positive cases as you know it at the Ottawa Mission right now?
We have no positive cases, Christy. We're doing regular testing. So as much as we're not an outbreak tomorrow, stay tuned. We could have one of the other shelters once they're still doing testing, their second round of testing, which we did a week and a half ago. So we'll see eventually they'll come out of outbreak. And hopefully, as long as we have no positive tests under our roof now, we're safe where we can admit people.
You've only got the capacity to take 8 people, 8 beds. That's very limited.
Beds. We've got over 100 people here now, well over 100 people in our total mix of our different programs. But right now we can only take in 8 additional beds tonight. 4 have moved on recently, and that's opened up things. People move on to their family, they move on to friends, or they get placed into housing. So as of now, we have vacancy for 8.
What do you make of the fact that the Tom Brown Arena has basically gone from an ice pad to now a shelter, as it's become an overflow space?
I make of it as a miracle and a lot of team effort. Again, thanks to the city staff. We're on those calls every day. We've been doing daily calls with Wendy from Inner City Health, the staff team from Ottawa Public Health, and we've been working with the team from the Human Needs Task Force and some of the great leadership there that we've seen to make alternate arrangements. We converted the Nicholas Street site over the space of close to 24 hours. So we suddenly had a second isolation center to handle this very high number of positives amongst the shelters that we were able to move people in there within 24 hours. It was quite a miracle. Beds, you're talking linens, towels, everything else. You know, my wife and I went out shopping late Saturday night. And to Walmart, and fortunately, there were other parts open than the groceries, and we loaded up on board games and cards and notepads and scribbling pads and puzzle books and delivered those. You know, I donned the full PPE and delivered those on Sunday morning just to keep the people who had suddenly been displaced with something to do. And now, over time, it's now set up to be a proper physical distancing or isolation center. But Tom Brown, again, very quick action on the part of the city to have that set up for an overflow site when we realized we had a high number of positives or people who are at high risk because they've been around people who were testing positive also have to be isolated. So it's been a big challenge. We've sort of prepared for this for 11 months, Christy. As we know, we knew the shelters were vulnerable because of our being at overcapacity. Of course, the only answer being, let's get that vaccine into the province, let's get these people vaccinated, and let's eliminate this risk from amongst the Ottawa population.
Are you confident that we have enough of these respite centres and overflow spaces so that anyone who needs to have a shower or a place to stay can actually do that right now?
Confident as we're speaking on the phone at 3:46 on Thursday afternoon, yes. And we'll see how the rest of the testing goes with some of our partners there and see where we're sitting, because the problem is, as I mentioned, is not only just the positives, it's the people who were in close contact with those positives and that. But again, a remarkable job to set up the site off Rideau Street with Inner City Health recently, and we're just you know, trying to make accommodations, because as we know, it's mild out there right now, but last weekend I really had a worry going into that weekend, Christy. We're looking at minus 18 to minus 20.
You were worried because normally, Peter Tilley, you'd be throwing down mats any other year. When you
absolutely.
And I talk in February, you say to me, no one's going to stay outside in the cold. We'll put them on the floor. We'll throw down mats. Everyone's going to be warm, but you just can't do that this year. You cannot do that.
Just can't do that. And, we've seen why, and despite our best precautions, 11 months of you know, full PPE, around the clock cleaning, you know, everything. Again, we were prepared for and have been doing such a remarkable job. This setup we had was for people who would say, I'm feeling ill, I'm not feeling well, and we would immediately have them go to a health clinic, be tested, isolated, wait for the test results. Then if they were positive already, even before the positive test, isolating those who were around them, could have come in contact. Everything set up for symptomatic. This one caught us a bit by surprise, the number of asymptomatic that spread through our shelter system here.
So you went back to the fact that there were people in close contact with the positive. That's what's keeping you on edge right now, is waiting to find out if those people ended up positive as well.
So we're good now. We've had all those results ourselves here at the Mission, because our testing began. We were the first shelter to begin testing. And now some of our partners are in that situation where they're waiting for those tests, the rest of those test results to start coming in as well too.
All right. Well, Peter Tilley, thank you for this update. We greatly appreciate it. I imagine it's been a stressful time for you. So thank you for sparing the time and carving out the time to come on the program.
Of course. Always appreciate the time, Christy, and great job you do at CFRA.
Thanks for that. That is Peter Tilley, CEO and Executive Director of the Ottawa Mission. So for them, it was the number of asymptomatic cases that was really surprising. It is 3:49. We're going to take a quick break here, and in just a moment after Maddie, we'll speak to a teacher in the Ottawa area, and we'll get their take on March break. How are teachers feeling right now? We'll get one perspective in just a moment. Don't miss it.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
You know, my decision point's going to be made exclusively on medical advice. If they believe that canceling the break to disincentivize travel and is in the best interest of public health, I'm going to follow that advice, full stop. It's actually as simple as that. We'll get the final opinion of the Chief Medical Officer of Health. I suspect in the coming days, we're going to hope to get that out to parents next week, give you sufficient time. Obviously, you know, quite frankly and transparently, parents and families should not be traveling. We know about the risks of the new variant. We want to keep people home. That we think that's important to send that message. But the decision on March break will be made based on the advice of the Chief Medical Officer of Health, and I should be able to receive that the coming week.
That's the Education Minister speaking to CTV Morning Live earlier today. Stephen Lecce saying that the government is considering the possibility of canceling March break for tens of thousands of students in Ottawa and across Ontario, but they haven't come up with a decision yet. He said he's going to receive advice from the Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. David Williams, and they're going to try and figure this out. Now, we chatted with the head of the Ontario Medical Association earlier on in the show, and I've also been getting a lot of your emails speaking to parents. But joining us right now for a different perspective, a teacher at an Ottawa high school. Steve, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I'm really excited to get your perspective on this. How do you feel about the matter?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say I could be unequivocally yes or no, but like from a personal perspective and a selfish perspective, obviously I would like to see the March break continue. And from what I've seen in my students, I think it's certainly beneficial for them in terms of their mental health. I am a high school teacher, so that may be a little bit different in terms of the younger elementary students. But I think there's a number of parts of this that really aren't even being explored or discussed. And so I just listened to the clip that you played from Minister Lecce when he talked about disincentivizing travel. And so I don't think necessarily that, you know, canceling the March break is the way to do that. First of all, it should be something that Canadians should be doing anyway. And secondly, that's kind of been done with the restrictions and the flight cancellations that have happened. I think we should really be looking more broadly at the mental health of the students and of the teachers and the education workers and what's best for them overall. And in that sense, from at least my perspective and what I see, the March break is absolutely necessary.
What about the opinions of some doctors who are saying, you know, it's the behaviors that we're trying to deter? And of course, we have to acknowledge that if the kids are at home and they're doing the wrong things, of course, that could end up disastrous. But if they do the right things, then that would be okay. But there are some doctors saying, let's just skip it altogether and avoid the temptation. What do you make of that?
So I'm not sure exactly what kind of behaviors we're trying to deter. So if it's traveling, that's not necessarily an option. If it's, it depends on what the state, I think, of the rest of society is at the time. If we're completely opened up, then that's another aspect altogether. I guess the arguments that kind of bother me the most is when I hear people say, you know, kids have missed enough school already. And that's just simply not true, because this isn't like last March when this was sprung upon us by surprise. When kids have missed school, there's been full school. It's been online. And the amount of strain that's put on both teachers and students to just, you know, suddenly switch and pivot has been huge. Somewhat similar to, you know, your show. You're on for a particular number of hours, but there's a lot of preparation that goes into that. And the preparation that goes into preparing an online class for 2.5 hours for a grade 12 university class is far more than what is in person. And on top of that, these kids are going from, I teach them in the afternoon, so they would have gone from 2.5 hours straight online in one course, switching gears and going 2.5 hours straight in another course, and worrying about if they're going to graduate and what their prom's going to be like and applying for universities. And they're tired. They are working their tails off and they're tired. And so I don't hear that part of the discussion too much. And then I don't really want to make it about this, but there is also the aspect that there's a number of educational workers that are paid hourly, that are paid on particular contracts. And so how would that be managed? You certainly can't expect those people to work for free. So I just think there's much more to the decision of, you know, if we cancel March break, people won't travel, and kids are probably better off in school anyway. I think there's a lot bigger aspects to that, and one that certainly shouldn't be ignored is the mental health of of education workers and also of the students.
I'm getting a lot of emails from parents saying, well, yes, there may have been school, but it was remote virtual school, and my kids just aren't learning well. They're not engaged. They're struggling. They're not paying attention. They're not connecting with the curriculum. So I want them to be in school through March break because they're falling behind. What has your experience been like as a teacher for high school students? How are they handling it?
I had some of my students who, once we got into, and it was the same for me, really. It was a big shift and it was difficult. But once we got into that groove, some of my students were actually enjoying the fact that they were learning online. However, for others, they desperately needed to go back. So I don't think you can really make a blanket statement. And in the morning, I'm a special education teacher as well, too. So I can certainly say that from that perspective, the students who have special needs and who have learning disabilities or IEPs, online learning is absolutely not the ideal. I mean, kids, there's no question, kids learn best when they are in school. Having said that, an extra 5 days is not going to make or break anyone's education. The negative aspect in terms of the exhaustion, the mental fatigue, the mental health, I don't think is going to be outweighed by 5 days of, extra math lessons.
Well, Steve, listen, we love to get all perspectives, so thank you very much for joining us. Best of luck.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks very much. Take care.
Steve, a high school teacher right here in the Capitol. We've heard from some parents. We've heard from a teacher. We played a clip of the Elementary Teachers Union earlier on in the show. And as you heard, we had the education minister on this morning on CTV Morning Live saying they're still looking at the medical advice. And they're mulling it over. No decision yet, but hopefully one coming soon. Just after 4 o'clock, Graham has all the news you need to know. Pardon me, Kendra is actually on the news desk. Kendra has everything you need to know, and we'll be right back.